Our next speaker is Stephen Douglas, the project manager with automation responsibilities for ICOF Australia Pty Limited. After obtaining his electrical engineering qualifications, Stephen started his career in the gold mining industry in 1993. In 1997, he was employed by ICOF South Africa as a service engineer. He migrated to Australia in 2001 and continued his employment with ICOF Australia in 2003. He then went to work for Longwall Associates Australia, where he initially oversaw all the shearer activities and subsequently advanced to operations manager. Stephen joined ICOF Australia in 2008 with a primary focus on automation. To date, he has been involved with multiple implementations of shearer automation, as well as interfacing with other longwall equipment. All Australian contracts with ICOF shears now operate on automation. Stephen currently oversees an operations and automation team, as well as project activities within ICOF. Please join me in welcoming Stephen Douglas.
I hope he's got your presentation. Oh, you got it?
Thank you. The subject regarding shear automation, and particularly to the longwall, has become quite an extensive subject. And there are so many things that we can say with regards to the automation and the components. For instance, we look at automation from an operational aspect, but we also got automated maintenance components related to the operations of the shear as well. Today I'm going to focus on and a quick outline about what we consider to be automation and how the shearer fits into that picture, and provide some experiences and some observations that we've obtained during our journey with regards to the implementation of the automation components. So let's start by looking at the direction of coal mining in Australia specifically. On the front page of the Australian Longwall magazine, a bold yet powerful statement was made, referring to the fact that coal will be automated and that's inevitable. And I believe that in Australia we've got to the point of no return where all new equipment from now on will actually have some form of automated application in it. And there are probably multiple reasons why we can discuss what is driving the automation to the extent that it is. But the two topics that stands out at this point in time relates to the aging population of our coal miners, as well as the coal price at the moment, which is quite a big subject with regards to the Australian market. Now, the question might be asked, now, what is making it so unique in Australia? Well, it's actually not that complex. It's actually very simple. All new inquiries or new tenders that we receive from our customers is accompanied by a document referring to the minimum requirements for longwall automation. Now, you will find it quite interesting to know that irrespective of the fact that various different mining companies provide a tender process, this document is almost word for word exactly the same. So what we do find, though, is that the customers in Australia regarding the purchasing of longwall equipment and shear equipment specifically provides this document. If we do not comply as an OEM with the requirements, then the chances are very low that you will actually be the successful tenderer. So, and that's the bottom line. And that's what's driving the automation at this point in time to where it is within Australia. Now, before I share some of our experiences that we've obtained over the past few years, what I would like to do is just give you a brief outline of what we consider automation is and the association with the shearer with regards to these aspects itself. I would like to give you a brief outline on the state-based automation, or the shear automation as we know it. And this is commonly used in longwall mines in Australia. And with this shear automation, we can define the behavior of the shearer to be automated within each sequence of the cutting cycle, or state as we refer to it, irrespective of the actual cutting method used. This particular cut plan that we see here at the moment is one that has been used at a mine called Tarmor Colliery. And in this point in time, they are using this by-die cycle as part of their automated sequences. And then just to give you a bit of a quick demonstration, you can see down here from the tailgate, they make their way in a run of phase towards the main gate with a couple of sequences or states that occurs. Then you've got a bit of a cleanup section, negotiating the snake, also with some sequences, and after the push, making their way back into the main gate with a cleanup. And then from there, you can see the entire sequence repeat itself in a mirror image towards the tailgate. Now, this particular sequence, as you see it here, is fully automated. And thanks to the cooperation and the assistance of the operators at Tarmor Colliery, we can say that the utilization of this particular automation package is above 98%. And this is not a figure that's just plucked out of the air. We're using operational data to determine what the automation is doing. And from there, we also further learn down the track, you know, what behaviors we can foresee that requires improvement. Now, there are three main components that we normally try to define within shear operation. The first one relates to the haulage reaction, which consists out of speed and direction, arranging our modes, and then the trigger to transit from one state to the next, or one sequence to the next. With state-based automation, we also now have the ability with height indication that we can now detect where the true floor is. And in the past, that was quite a complex situation where height reference was always in relation to a straight line. And with this technology being developed and improved, we nowadays have got an open door with more opportunities with what we can do within a cutting cycle. And in this instance, we want to give a mention towards your gating automation and how that could be applied. What we also can do is, with the leading drum, knowing what the true floor height is, we can also use the leading drum then as an offset to determine exactly what the actual face extraction or the face opening should be, and then apply that then along the face to maintain that consistent face opening. The profile is used to determine the roof and the floor, what we then do is that is then used to determine our extraction zone or the face opening. And we also use that then to steer the actual horizon of the shearer. And that gives us just a brief outline of what state-based automation is. The other aspect of longwall automation that we apply is what we call radar detection. And what we have here is a radar built into the ranging arm, and that basically detects any objects or any positive collision that could occur with the canopies. And should we get ourselves into that situation where that could well be the case, then a signal will be sent to the controller of the shearer to stop the shearer. Now, this is a fairly new technology, and what we do see from a benefit point of view is the fact that in poor visibility conditions, this could be a very handy aid for the operators not to find themselves into that situation. Shield automation, as we know it, is standard in regards to the fact that we use the shearer position. And that is sent by means of communication interfacing to the shield controller, which then in return then will provide defined sequences as far as your gate and push and your runner face push is concerned. Ethernet communications plays a vital role in the sense that becomes the arterial for data to be conveyed between the shear and the gate end, as well as information towards a surface. We also use this particular method of Ethernet redundancy to give us the opportunity then to have interfacing occurring between the shearer and other longwall equipment. Now, with interfacing, my apologies. With interfacing, it plays an integral role in the sense that with the interfacing, we would like to have the opportunity to create an automation that is a system where the shearer then will interact with all the other components. The shearer plays a vital role in this regard here, and what we do is we use Ethernet over IP to convey the data then to the various components and receive data then back as well. We will all agree that with any coordinator or person that supports the longwall operations and activities, that the operational visibility plays a vital role. And in order to enhance or aid the assistance of such a person, we've got onboard cameras on the shearer giving us a view from the ranging arm, and that can also be used in when archived as a handy means of tool to also investigate any incidences that might occur. In addition, we also have what we call web visualization, and that basically provides the freedom that any person that supports or look after the longwall then can, from any computer or workstation within the production network, providing that it has got an internet browser installed, can have access to the operational data of the shearer. And that allows them to look after the shearer and provide solutions of repairs during breakdown, not necessarily that they have to be underground itself, but that they can be in any position to actually start taking control over any breakdown situation that may have occurred. Trending and event logging has become a means of assisting with fault finding and incidences. And what we do find nowadays is the fact that these data is now also time stamped. So irrespective of the fact whether you use it as part of your maintenance regime or from an operational aspect, this data can become quite handy to actually investigate any of those when they do occur, from leading to a breakdown or leading up to a situation where you may have had an operational incident occurring. We also see LASC as part of the aspects of longwall automation, and that's a system developed by the CSIRO where data of the cut profile has been conveyed by means of a navigation system, or the LN270 as we know it, and what we do have is that these data are then accumulated to provide us a clear indication of what actually happens underground, and also provide us then information regarding the horizon control as well as the face alignment used by the controller of the shields. And normally when we look at the components regarding the expectations of longwall automation, then in the past, especially in Australia, that created a fair bit of controversy. Today, I don't want to go down the avenue of enhancing or talking further about any of those, but more importantly, I would like to give you an overview of the immediate aid and benefits that there are within automation with the shearer, and reflect that basically to some of our customers that we've used it with down the track. We will all agree that most important is for any mine is to review the options to reduce the exposure of risk for our operators. And I believe that automation has got the ability to eliminate many of those risks that we encounter on a daily basis. I also believe that it's not acceptable anymore to just provide an operator with a dust mask and personal protective equipment and expect them to operate in that regard. We need to start looking a bit more innovatively how automation can assist in that regard. Inconsistent production and the methods of shearer operations have been one of the biggest showstoppers that we've experienced within the longwall production. We've been quite fortunate in the sense that as we've been involved with a case study which was done during an implementation of state-based automation at Oaky Creek number 1 in 2011. Comparisons were logged in order to understand the viability of the automation system so that they could understand what exactly they have purchased. It's not always that easy to obtain these type of information, and we are really grateful for the fact that the management team and the automation team of Oaky number 1 have agreed to share these details with us. Now, the first slide outlines the average tons per hour received achieved per shift. That was before the implementations. And here we can see quite a variable indication as far as the production rates are concerned. You know, we've got these skyscrapers happening and a couple of things that happens below the line. The average line outlines that they produced at a tendency of about 1,100 tons per hour. After the implementation, we see that there's a more even value displayed as far as the production rates are concerned. But more importantly, we saw the average increase to almost 1,500 tons after that happened, and nothing else was changed. It's based by having the automation in place. The seam that Oakey Creek is mining is quite renowned for its rich methane levels. And in many instances, that has created a big stoppage for them and downtime, in some instances, even weeks of downtime that occurred. Automation was used in this instance to, in a way that as the gas levels were elevated to a concerned level, that the automation then would have gone and actually reduced the speed to an extent that the levels actually then will lower down to something more acceptable. Once that's been achieved, the automation then would increase the haulage speed to the required production level itself. And you can see this pattern continue all the way along with the face until they get into the gate end. Now, this has allowed them to actually keep the production consistently moving forward without having unnecessary stoppages because of high gas levels. And that was a very handy way of how they controlled those gas levels then. The stone dilution or cutting stone dilution plays a vital role within their production regime. And surveyors will on a regular basis go and view what the exact outcome is of their dilution. Now, before the before they actually started the implementation, the dilution was 20.54%, which was quite acceptable. After the implementation, we see that dilution has decreased quite considerably to under 14%. And that's the type of thing from an automation point of view that we need to look at and see, well, automation can be of benefit. It can provide us with assistance as far as achieving some of those objects in regards to production. Another positive impact was seen in the availability of the equipment, especially right after the automation was implemented. And that's basically just a common thing that we've seen also along the other mines. I'll just put down a couple of the names of those that was applied as well. Now, for the requirements of automation, I need to mention to you that this is basically our own perspective. We dealt with a few things. We create a bit of an understanding of what's going on there. So please look at it at that particular concept and follow that with me. When we look at automation, it's important that it stays that it is stable, and that we get to the point where you know that we don't get any interferences due to downtime or breakdowns. If you look at the aircraft technology, they've got what they call redundancy systems, and we can understand why they require that. But the lesson that we learned from that was that if you apply that within your technology and your machine, not only do you have what they call a sensor backup in case of failure, but we also get to the point where the control of the shearer then continuously monitor the readings of those sensors. And if you do find a deviation that occurred, that will be flagged, you can disable the faulty sensor and at least continue along. And that maintains the momentum then, at least with regards to the using automated sequences. Another method of redundancy that's used is for our communication. So by power line modem, we've got data communications conveyed via the trailing cable to the gate end. And alternatively, we also got by means of wireless communication to the access points, a Wi-Fi data that's been conveyed as well. Another requirement that we've learned from is the fact that you cannot assume that if your first implementation was successful, that the second will automatically will be exactly the same way. Each mine has got their own particular needs and requirements that they have to deal with, and also their challenges. And therefore, it's important for us to avoid that what they call cookie mold mentality. We need to understand what the automation is going to be doing there before we start applying that. And at the end, we can get to the point where we actually have a positive outcome. With regards to implementation, we had to learn via the hard way but also learn some valuable lessons in that regard, where the application or the implementation of project management does play a vital role when you look at the concept of automation as we know today. And what I would like to do is give you a couple of our pointers that we've used over these years to formulate a bit of a recipe that is now giving us consistent outcomes. The first thing is to always understand what the solid practices are that we want to follow. So a project also wants to always want to be finished safely on time, within budget and within spec. It's always important, because of the fact that automation can appear to be quite abstract, to stay focused on the final outcome from the very beginning. Planning should be broken down in stages, so treat it a bit like a roadmap. You will have to eventually have to go through a couple of towns to get to your end destination. And more importantly, if you deviate from your plan, you might end up as if you deviate from a roadmap and you might get lost. So it's important to bear that in mind. For complex outcomes, it's important to set smaller targets to achieve that. Be prepared for things that they can go wrong, and have contingencies in place, because that will help you to set you back on track once you do find yourself in that situation. I can't emphasize the importance of communication and the consequences that you have, that when you assume things during an implementation, how badly wrong they can go. To leave testing till you have got the systems installed underground is going to be too late. It's far easier to test a system in a controlled environment than trying to test it while it is in your underground situation. Measure the progress that you've made and capture those details, because when you go off track, that's the easiest way to track back to where things went wrong, and from there you can start rebuilding again. Review your implementations, and if you get to the point when you have achieved some positives and some negatives, take it in consideration, because what will happen is that will become the benchmark for your next implementation. There's so much information and data nowadays available from the Shearer, and what we need to do is we need to start looking at what they call at behavior patterns, and those healthy behavior patterns becomes a good benchmark then to start looking at ways of how the automation can be improved. Clear visibility of what exactly occurs in the long haul is very important, and with all these fancy technologies, it's important not to only just rely solely on that, but to get to the point where we actually are going underground and verify these things, especially if the technologies are still fairly new. Make use of the expertise of the OEMs. We have a team of automation engineers in Australia, and the value that they provide is the fact that when they are underground and there are issues arising, then normally, the majority of the time, it was an outcome where a person misunderstood the technology or they misinterpreted how it should be applied, and that could be rectified very easily. We've also learned that the minds go and they take ownership of the automation, particularly from a management point of view, that's where we've seen our best results and our best outcomes. And a mine we've seen those actually happening quite substantially was at Oakey North mine. Now, Oakey North, they broke the Australian production record for Australia in 2009. And the production related to having a 24-hour production of over 56,000 tons, a weekly production of just over 312,000 tons, and the monthly was 1.1 million tons that they produced. Now, it's not going to be fair to say that automation was the sole instigator for the achievements, but if you look at the attitude and the approach that the mine is having, and you look at how they approach automation, then it's fair to say that, number one, they are the people that make the automation work, but also the automation then had a positive contribution as far as their success rate is concerned. Now, they have in 2009 produced 8.1 million tons, which was the second highest production figures for that year, but continued along in 2010, 2011, and last year to maintain to be the best producer of coal in Australia longwall-wise. This brings us, though, however, to a bit of a challenge we're having at the moment, and that relates to something that maybe all suppliers of coal shearers is concerned, and that's the fact that we in Australia are quite fortunate that there's a large amount of automation of shearers being produced, and I believe that this year we would be in a position there where there will be over 50 orders placed by IKOF, to be presented outside of Germany as well as in Australia. The Chinese market will be will receive the vast majority, but globally there will be a lot of machines being manufactured. Now these machines will end up having class-leading technologies on them. We will even get to the point where we have employed many technical expertise to assist us in developing and also supporting the automation. The issue we're having at the moment is the fact that outside of Australia, these technologies, even though they exist on the shearer, is not being used. And there's never been even made the opportunity for us to get to the point where we can prove and demonstrate the benefits that they are. So what we end up having at the moment is that there's a lack of application for automation when we refer to the global mining industry. And when we compare ourselves with the automation that's been used in some of the other mining industries where that is applied, then we're pretty much still in our infancy stages, I believe, at this point in time. And what we need is we need global application, because global application will give us perspective of exactly what is required for automation to be implemented and to make it work, and also give the opportunities, not only from a beneficial point of view, but to get to the point where we actually then can make those improvements within the automation to make it work better. I would like to conclude by saying that I believe that automation has a big role to play within our great industry. And I would like to make a request to those people that manages the mines to at least consider the application of automation and look at the benefits where you guys could claim from, and at least give the automation a try. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Stephen. Any questions? Well, I'll challenge you, Stephen. How many shears does IKOF have operating in Australia? And my understanding that all of them are running full automation?
All the contract machines. There's a couple of old machines still in place, the old DC machines, and they are not in a position to be upgraded to that extent. But all the new machines that we've, the new series that we have, about 10 shearers at the moment that we have, and they are all fully automated at this point in time and running at certain levels of automation.
And what's the percent availability of the automation systems?
It's about 98%.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. I might just want to make a point in the fact that what we do is when we determine the availability of an automated sequences, we take the entire cutting cycle and then break the cutting cycle down to see where automation was applied or not. And then if you look at it from a cutting cycle point of view, then I think 98% is actually providing us a good indication of where we can go with automation.
Very good. Thank you very much.